Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
It's March Madness, everyone. But today on CityCast Las Vegas, co-host Sarah Lohman and contributor Vogue Robinson join me as we dive into the week of news in other kinds of courts. We've got the wind throwing down with Fountain Blue in Las Vegas courts of law, Governor Lombardo versus President Biden in the court of public opinion, and the DMV versus Henderson on their own home court. It's Friday, March 22nd. I'm David Figler, and here's what Las Vegas is talking about. Sarah Lohman and former co-host Vogue Robinson, welcome to CityCast Las Vegas Friday News Roundup.
Yay!
Good morning.
Vogue, this is the first time we've been back in studio together.
Yes.
I know. I was like, oh, I got a Sarah episode. Yeah! That's what I'm talking about. I was like, it's going to be lit. Let's go.
I'm so happy to be here with you.
Oh, man. Expectations high. I like that.
No. It's going to be good. I'm thrilled to be in the same virtual room as Vogue Robinson. This is the first time since I took this position.
Oh, wow. Well, I am empowered off of this energy, so let's jump right into it. There's madness on the Las Vegas Strip. The Fountain Blue, who got sued by the Wynn, is countersuing the Wynn back. Oh, Vogue, tell me about this.
All the things. The Wynn sued Fountain Blue back in February, and they said, hey, you pulled our executives and you made them like breach their contracts, mess up the non-competes. We're not happy with y'all. You're poaching people. And essentially, you know, came out their mouth to say, you can't keep your people. You can't develop your employees. So you came over here sniffing around and snatched up our folks. And it's disrespectful and it's unethical. So we're suing. Psh.
Yeah. Okay. So now the big news, though, is that Fountain Blue strikes back. So what did they say?
Yes. So the pendulum swings back and they said, actually, and that was on Tuesday, the Wynn bullied their staff to stay. And there was like profane emails that they leaked out into the internet. And he said, you know what? Your staff came to us in search of newness, of new joy. They were dissatisfied. And honestly, based on the fact that our employees stayed at your hotel for X amount of time, putting lots of money in your pockets. And of course, while our employees, while Fountain Blue employees were staying at the Wynn, Wynn employees and Fountain Blue employees started talking. And of course, they thought, it does sound interesting over there. Oh, wow, they're putting you up in our nice hotel. They're paying for you to stay here while the building is being built. So it's basically the Fountain Blue saying, it's not on us. It's on y'all. And also, the Fountain Blue said, hey, your CEO is unprofessional and profane. Like, they were sending messages back and forth over, apparently, the holiday. And the CEO of the Wynn...
Oh, you looking it up? Are we actually going to read these messages that went back and forth? Okay, let's go for it.
CEO Craig Billings, yes.
Yeah, I want this. I want every drop of tea from this. I want a dramatized reading from you two professional performers of these text messages. Please.
Okay, hold on. So Vogue will be playing the role of the Fountain Blue executive, and I will be playing the role of the Wynn executive.
Text messaging. Craig, please give me a call at your convenience. Thanks.
On holiday in Europe with my family, who are very important to me. Have devoted enough time to this already at the expense of my wife and daughter. We'll call you when I'm back. Like you, but your guy is an effing rank amateur. And he didn't say effing. He said the word. He hasn't operated a lemonade stand, much less a complex operation like you're about to open. He's running around ham-fistedly trying to poach people under contract, which is a surefire way to turn the town against you. Rein him in to stop the damage he's doing to your business. I'd like to see you succeed, but I'm not going to take shit from an arrogant newcomer like your boy.
Craig, your facts are all wrong. I'm reaching to clear the air. As I told you many times before, we are not interested in any of your employees that are under contract. Enjoy your vacation with your family. Hopefully, you can find time to give me a call. I don't think it's in yours or my best interest to have our relationship start like this. All the best, Jeff.
My facts are not wrong. Speak soon. And he's 86 for good. He should feel free to reciprocate. And scene.
Oh my God.
Did you like that, Sarah Logan?
I am crying, honestly.
All right, let's rein this back in. I do want to get to the bottom of what are they fighting about and contrast that with what are they fighting for? Who is benefiting from this blood feud?
Us, apparently.
Entertainment value?
I think the goal, you know, because it's I think the big question around it is about the non-compete, right? So do casinos need to have non-competes? How does that protect the casinos and does it harm the workers?
I mean, I get it. They're fighting about whether or not someone was poached or not. They're fighting about disparaging things that are happening back and forth. But what really are they fighting for? Like, what is the principle underlying all this?
Contracts. If someone signed a contract and said, I'm going to work here X amount of time, and if I leave, then there's 2 years that I won't go work for, you know, a similar company. I think that's a difficult spot to be in if it's casino work, because there are so many casinos in the Valley, and most of the time one casino wants to hire somebody who already has casino experience. So it's like, once you're in the field, or you've been in the field for like 5 to 7 years, that's your primary skill set. So then you have nowhere else to go if you sign the non-compete. And so that kind of sucks for the employee.
I mean, Sarah, what do you think the rationale behind these non-compete clauses are? And are they good for a city like Las Vegas?
I mean, I understand it's like some old school mob shit is what it feels like. I mean, you just don't want your best insiders to go be an insider for somebody else's casino. But it's also shocking that this is legal, because people got to work. Like, what the idea is, if you ever want to leave your workplace, you can't continue working in the casino industry. That's insane. That also opens up the room for abuse of employees too, and really terrible working conditions if they're under this non-compete clause where they can't work another casino for a couple years.
See, I want to throw something else out there underlying all of this, because on the surface, you know, they have to have their legal arguments to get into court. They have to have their bases for, you know, civil liability. But I think behind all of this is a great deal of insecurity that there's just not enough in the modern day high rollers and spenders to go around. And when big executives leave one property, that they have a following or relationships that will follow them to the detriment of the other property. Hmm. And so I think Wynn, which, you know, has held upper echelon status on the Strip since they were created, you know, really in that top tier of the highest end rollers, et cetera, is maybe a little more afraid of places like Resorts World and Fountain Blue than they would lead people to believe.
I don't know. With the amount of casino winnings that they've been, you know, it's been record after record after record.
Over $1 billion a month.
Yeah. So like every single month they are clocking, you know, new earnings. And of course that's pan casino. But it doesn't seem like it's a problem. It seems like there's plenty of money.
I think so. But I think there's also just that insecurity that heads will roll. I mean, look, even Fountain Blue. I mean, you know, I'm not picking sides here, but Fountain Blue has lost so many executives, poached or otherwise, since they opened in December 2023. I mean, we're only a few months out from that, and I think they've replaced the C-suite a couple of times almost, you know?
Yeah, so the people they poached, have they already quit? Are we talking about people who don't even work there anymore?
We don't know if it's the poached people or if it's just the people that they hired.
I assume that there are some in there. And then the new CEO of Fountain Blue is announced to be an old CEO of Wynn. And that's not part of this conversation. But I think it's part of this bigger conversation I'm suggesting is that, you know, the hotels, especially the more indie ones, I mean, obviously, we're talking about properties that aren't part of the big behemoth of MGM or Caesars Entertainment. We're talking about the last few remaining more closely held properties. And so this is really indicative, I think, of a new feel on the Strip and a huge insecurity that we're maybe not talking enough about.
If they've got the Wins old CEO, I want to see those text messages.
Yeah, I want to see all the text messages.
I don't want to see any more text messages, y'all.
I want the gaming board, when they give people licenses, saying, okay, we need to look into your phone for a sec.
No, thank you.
Well, that's the question I want to ask you is, you know, does this blood feud stay between the two, or are we going to see a trend with all the hotels?
I think if there's fear like that, I think everybody has kind of been whispering a little bit more loudly that we need to diversify how we make money in this town. And so maybe that'll come. But I think it's more so about just, I mean, they reference like the new kid in town. So every time there's a new and shiny hotel casino, they're going to get the most attention. And so maybe it's more like jealousy. But I think the expectation is always, if you start a small property, you're getting that experience so you can work your way up to a larger property and hopefully increase the amount of money you make as an employee. So I don't know. It feels like fair game. It feels like hot mess per use.
You know, the diversity of how we make our money is actually a great point, too, because also the casinos themselves have diversified over the years. We're talking about, I mean, they're saying earnings. That's not necessarily winnings, because mm-hmm. when it comes to the millennial focus, it's about selling us alcohol, selling us experiences in which we can drink, right? We don't gamble as much as a boomer. And it remains to be seen what Gen Z is interested in. But also, so the movie studio south of Summerlin was just approved, too. So building off of last week's conversation, where we talked about this idea of Vegas as Hollywood 2.0, we are like one massive step closer to that. We're going to see a actual movie studio within the limits of our city.
And off Strip.
We'll see how the court cases wind down, and we'll hope that none of the hotels like have giant signs projected on them telling the other hotels to go F themselves. Hey, it's David Figler, and one of my favorite food festivals is coming back to town. It's Vegas Unstripped over at the Palms Hotel on Saturday, May 18th. Over 24 chefs from some of Las Vegas's most talked about restaurants creating original, unique menu items they've never made before. Chef creativity at its best. We're talking chefs from Partage, Esther's Kitchen, Milpa, EDO, and more, including this year's James Beard Award finalist Steve Kessler from Aroma. Tickets are $150 and are all inclusive of food and drink, so you don't have to pay for anything once you're inside. No hidden up charges. I went last year, and it was so crowded in the best possible way. We got one remarkable dish after another, and while it was a little indulgent, here's the best part. The net proceeds go to local charities. So head on over to VegasUnstripped.com to get your tickets now. We'll see you there. Another blood feud, Governor Lombardo taking on President Biden. And the topic this time is affordable housing. Sarah, can you explain that one?
I mean, is it a blood feud? So, okay, here's what's happening. Actually, out of curiosity, David, I know you're a homeowner. Vogue, do you also own your home or do you rent?
I do.
Okay, and I'm a renter. So this whole thing is about affordable housing. And so, you know, we are a swing state. Biden has been here 3 times in 3 months. Kamala has been here as well. And his last visit, he talked about affordable housing. So in Nevada, you have to make $28 an hour to afford a 2-bedroom, which even
rental,
which even I'm like, and have to be partnered? Like, that doesn't even seem like a comparison to what is actually happening in the city.
Well, I mean, we just accept that Las Vegas in particular, if not at the top of the worst places to find affordable housing,
yeah,
is always in the top tier. And that's why Biden is talking about it, I think, and why, you know, Lombardo's taking a shot.
So Biden is offering a $10,000 tax credit for first-time home buyers and sellers, too. This is actually something that he's looking across the country, but would affect Nevada equally. So yeah, if you had a starter home and you're selling it, you'd also get a $10,000 credit. For renters, he says that particularly here in Nevada, he's going to use antitrust legislation to go after corporate landlords who, I don't know if it's in the courts, I don't know if they're guilty, but are basically price fixing. He's also talking about expanding housing vouchers for rental assistance, which includes guaranteed vouchers for youth aging out of foster care and low-income veterans. So that is what Biden wants to do. Mm-hmm. Lombardo wrote a letter that says he wants more public land, more BLM land, turned over to build more houses. And he says that this lack of collaboration between Vegas, the states, and the federal government is resulting in the fact that they don't have land to build more affordable houses on. Biden campaign pushed back and says that privatizing land for development is slow and there's no guarantees in place that says that that land will be used for affordable housing. There's no laws. There's no agreements. They can build whatever million-dollar homes they want to with a beautiful view.
Whatever they want.
And additionally, like one of the Biden campaign pointed out that there's a lot of sprawl here in Clark County. The last kicker I want to throw into here is that Lombardo is still sore about a V. Kwame because he wanted to I was going to build affordable housing there and a solar field. And you took it away from me.
Were you?
I know, Vogue. And it drove me crazy. So he wrote another letter to Biden when Biden declared it a national monument saying but we could have built a solar field. It's like build it somewhere else, other Joe. So that's the thing. So he brought that up in the letter as well.
I want to say, look, this is all an election year. Biden is obviously the candidate. Lombardo is being a proxy for the Republicans. Look, Biden's take seems to be all options are on the table to make affordable housing exist in places like Las Vegas. But Lombardo is like, only public lands. That's all I care. So really, how big a contrast is this? And who do you guys think has won the battle of attention here?
I mean, I'm always, I'm like very quietly rooting for Joe Lombardo because every once in a while, I feel like he just like slowly peeks out and is like, I care about people. And, you know, I just don't agree with like the ways he wants to do things. But I'm just like, I think that Joe might have like a little heart. Gold in there, like deep inside.
I don't know.
But it's really interesting that he stays talking about the protected land, and that is a thing that he won't let go of. And so in that way, like that's the consistency. Yes. Is like, I want this protected land. I'm tired of the government snatching up areas in Nevada just because it's empty. You know, what if I had plans for that chunk of land? It's like, bro, you would have to build infrastructure. So what would it cost to, if you built this solar field and you built affordable housing in the area near a V. Kwame, do you have to build more grocery stores? You have to build more
roads, and all that falls on the county to do the infrastructure, and the developers make the money and the county foots the bill per year.
Right. So I don't think that that's really like on our behalf, on the people's behalf. I think that's more about certain types of deals. I think with you know, the president, it's election season. So every time someone's like, oh, the president's here, I'm like, oh, traffic.
Oh, my God. All right. Well, Sarah, let me make it more direct then. So Biden has obviously come here to engender himself to the populace. Lombardo tries to like derail his thunder. Did he do a good job?
No, I mean, nobody did, because none of these things are guaranteed. Like, we all need help, right? Like, you know, I've talked to you all that I'm super housing insecure, right? I'm at the whim of my landlord. And should something happen and they want me out at the end of the lease, I go. And then where do I go, right? So, and, you know, I work here at CityCast. I'm not one of the city's, you know, extremely low-income people, but, like, still at 40, having a job, I'm very housing insecure. So nothing Biden has promised is tactile, physical happening. And I'm also not going to buy a home on some land at the edge of town. I will also say that the issue with getting a home or renting a home in new lands is that people have to commute for their jobs. Mm-hmm. And so the further out you put low-income housing, the further they have to travel to work, which adds time, expense, exhaustion. A lot of people who are low income are working more than one job, right? They're working 16 hours a day. So it's just not a good idea.
And then you've got our U.S. senators like Catherine Cortez Masto and Senator Jackie Rosen, who are already behind this move to open up public lands for development through the public lands bill that we've talked about on the podcast. But they want to do it more like horse trading, like make sure environmentalists are on board as best they can and a little this for that, etc. But Lombardo's just like, no, no horse trading, no compromise, no red tape. I want all of it gone and all of it for developers.
The red tape is there for a reason. It's to slow it down.
But is this just political theater that is distracting us from these bigger issues, like what Vogue's talking about how we develop public lands?
That's what it feels like. It's like it's easy to be here and local, or to be the governor of one, you know, of one space, and to be like, well, the federal government is messing up everything. There's too much red tape. I think that's part of Joe Lombardo's average Joe kind of like persona that we're getting. It's like government sucks, and like there's so much red tape. There's so many things. I can't do my job because the federal government. And I think it's a really easy way to throw blame in one direction instead of really just say, okay, well, what are the solutions that we can bring since we're not going to go over there by Aviquime? Let it go. Let it go, Joe.
Red tape is not always a bad thing because it means that we're moving into new lands responsibly. It's also, I think, asking the question of like, do we need more land right now? Should we be building up our neighborhoods that already exist, right? Mm-hmm. And I also want to say that it can be done super responsibly. I mean, last year I participated in a project. New land was turned over to Henderson, and Henderson did an on-the-ground survey of which they both had a pay team, but also you could volunteer to literally walk square meter by square meter and look at the land and see what was there and report on it, so that they were responsibly creating not just new neighborhoods, but also integrating parks and important environments for natural wonders and natural wildlife too. So like, I'm so proud of the Henderson government and so proud to be here because of the great care they're taking with this new land.
I think the takeaway is that when we're talking about affordable housing, when we're talking about public lands, we do need to be thoughtful and not get distracted by this political theater. So Joe versus Joe on this
just do
one.
Do something, yeah.
I think you both lose here.
Ooh, ding, ding, ding.
So speaking of Henderson, look, everyone hates the DMV.
Da, da, da.
But everyone needs the DMV. And so there has been this push to make the DMV more user-friendly, more accessible, more based on customer service. And so they're rolling out like some innovations, new mobile appointment systems, trying to make things go more online. Of course, you know, with that comes some harder decisions, including what appears to be, as reported in the Nevada Current by our friend MJ Lyle, shutting down a Henderson location, like physically shutting down the brick and mortar Henderson DMV. And that has ruffled feathers because everybody wants the DMV to be better, but nobody wants to lose convenience. And I think a lot of people like having a closer DMV. So what do you think? Good thing or a bad thing that this is the approach that the Nevada DMV seems to be taking?
From my end, well, it's not one. They're going to open a new one. They're going to build it somewhere. So, you know, eventually y'all will get a DMV. Is that the only DMV in Henderson?
It is.
Oh, no.
I know. It's going to be built on Silverado, and I don't remember what. I know, Vogue. It doesn't feel good. They're basically like, well, we can't afford to have them both, so we're going to close Henderson.
Oh, my God. I feel bad because you were just like, Henderson, go Henderson. They're like, by the way, we don't care about your driving needs.
Oh, but it's not Henderson's fault. It's the county.
Ah, but they had a fight. So I know the things that I saw that I felt like were kind of red flags were that they were saying, okay, we're gonna contract third-party organizations to proctor the driving tests. So you're no longer going to go to the DMV for your like physical driving test. You're going to go to like a school. And so there's like 8 schools, I think, that have signed up for that.
Whoa. Okay.
And so it's like, I always get a little annoyed when the government like contracts out and contracts out and contracts out, where it's like, are you going to do the thing that you said you were going to do? You're just going to hire somebody else to do it, which is fine-ish, but you know, benefits and taking care of people. Anywho, so that's a red flag for me, contracting things out. And the second thing is, what if you don't have a smartphone?
Yes.
What if you are housing insecure?
Most people who are housing insecure do have a smartphone rather than a computer. So in some ways, I get the online interaction, because nowadays most people do have access to a smartphone, or we can say a free computer to library. I'm sorry for interrupting you, Vogue. Please go on.
No, it's okay. I feel like most, but I think, you know, if we get to the, if we go over here to the most vulnerable folks, and then also just kind of like certain like age demographics that are not as.
Who are just trying to get their car back or their license back so they could get to work or whatever with whatever car they were able to get a hold of. Sure.
Yeah. Not as internet savvy, then you do have a problem. And so I think that's the thing, is like that barrier right there might be a major issue for a lot of folks that are in Henderson. And it's kind of, you know, it's its own sprawling space.
Ugh. So is the DMV damned if they do, damned if they don't? Like, if they just keep on the way that they are, that sucks. If they, like, try to innovate and streamline, that sucks.
Listen, it you know, obviously they're hoping to be able to do both. Though, I think what you're saying about accessibility is a really great point. Like, not everyone is internet savvy. People do need help in person. Sometimes, I'm sure all of us have had the experience of being on a customer service line and going, talk to a person, because the robot doesn't understand what you need. So I, you know, moved here 2.5 years ago, as you all know. And so, yeah, I've been able to update my registration online, easy, no problem, except you still have to go in person to a smog check somewhere. But when I moved, I had to get an in-state license because I wanted to vote. And I had to change my registration within 60 or 90 days for my car, which was like a 6-document multi-step process.
Yeah.
So going back and forth, I could do that. I could go to the one in Henderson and it was less than 10 minutes. Now the new one is on Silverado somewhere. Like, there's no DMV in Henderson, and not everyone who needs services from the DMV has a car.
Boom.
I think that that's sort of, you know, again, speaking of accessibility for the low income, you need an ID to do all kinds of things, including voting. So you might be at the DMV, but now we don't have one that's close. They say that they're going to start doing some services within AAA locations, but like, that Henderson DMV was absolutely packed, and I'm sort of shocked that the new facilities is going to absorb all that traffic, and it's so much further from us.
And, you know, that is a major, major issue in the population of people who are unhoused.
Yes.
To get those IDs, because they're not easy and they're not cheap.
I should shout out that the registration process has been
easier
super
now.
Easy the past 2 years. Yeah. And I do love that.
And they had to deal with a lot of stuff with like the pandemic too, right, David? Like, a lot of this is a result of the pandemic when nobody could go. We couldn't go and be in person. Nobody was going to be cramped in the DMV building.
Look, the DMV is always going to be a target for disgruntled citizens and comedians alike. It's not going to change. But I want to ask you this. What other services, government or otherwise, just broadly speaking, do you think should move online or be streamlined? I mean, get as silly as you want with this one.
I mean, the pandemic, it's been a boon for people who don't want to talk to people sometimes. For as much as, for social as I am, you know, I'm an extroverted introvert. I get really drained, right? I'm also those so full luxury that sometimes I will order coffee from the coffee shop that's 10 minutes away while I'm still in bed. And so that I just know it's coming, and that feels so good. Vogue, you look shocked and ashamed.
She's cheating the line. Vogue's like, you're a cheater. You're skipping the line.
And then they just bring it to me, and then I open my door and no one is there but coffee. And that is sometimes what I need on a Sunday morning.
All right, Sarah, you got serious on me. I'm going to skip over you and try to get some silly out of my friend Vogue. What do you think?
If I have a UTI, I can get a doctor online and get the medicine delivered to me.
As long as you're not peeing on the screen.
No.
That technology's not here yet.
Well, it's about trust. It's about listening to women. They're like, we trust you that you know when you have a UTI. Here's your antibiotics.
Vogue, help me out here.
Oh, no. You guys know what? My HOA, they were... My whole neighborhood was talking about that you should be there are neighborhoods where you can check the poop. Like, when you move into a neighborhood, you give a sample of your dog poop so that if your dog poop is found on the street, they'll find you directly.
That's a little like Big Brother is watching your dog poop.
No, that's what Vogue wants. She wants Big Brother to like do something better, like monitor the poopers who don't pick up.
I think that the DMV is the best possible like government agency that we've had to deal with it that has modernized enough so that we don't have to go in there, so that to leave space for all of the people who need help with filling out documents and have questions that want to talk to a person, human being, 017 times. I think that that's lovely. Maybe they need more phone, like people to answer the phone, actually.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think all government services do.
Yeah, but I can't think of anything. Oh, well, I mean, what if they did it for marriages? Would that destroy our economy, David?
You could just get married on your phone?
Yes.
So, like, take driving to the nth degree. And it's like, we just got married on our phone. I love that.
Yeah, and you just take a selfie for yourself and put it on your little certificate and be like, I witnessed myself getting married.
We're proving our love through Instagram.
I mean, we can't even say gambling's online already. Like, what even is left?
There's not much left.
I mean, I can't afford or even sometimes get tickets to those great shows over at like Allegiant or T-Mobile or otherwise. Like, maybe they should have like a little virtual ticket for you so you can come on.
Oh, more like simulcast kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah. But a little less formal and a lot less expensive.
You don't love Ticketmaster, David?
Well, as long as people still get their podcasts online, I think we're all going to be all right.
Oh, David.
Hey, Vogue Robinson, Sarah Lohman, thanks so much for joining me on CityCast Las Vegas.
Thanks, David.
My pleasure. And you know what? Driverless cars, that is the thing I want to be able to order online and I want to exist.
Stop.
It's the one place I want less people is in my car.
No, don't do it, Sarah. Don't do it. You need to watch the most recent episode of Grey's Anatomy, friend. Don't do it.
I'm going to end it this way. Shout out to both the Lady Rebels who are in the NCAA and the men's UNLV basketball team who are doing well in the NIT. Keep it up, y'all. And that is all for today here on CityCast Las Vegas. Our producers this week were Sonia Cho Swanson, Layla Muhammad, and Dylan Brogan. Our newsletter editor is Rob Cattrall-Reese, and our hosts are Sarah Lohman and me, David Figler. Music is by OG Moose, Epidemic Sound, and All the Kimonos. We record this show on the traditional homelands of the Nuuvi, the Southern Paiute people. If you enjoyed the show, go tell a friend, rate our show, leave us a review, and subscribe to our indispensable morning newsletter. We'll be back Monday morning with more news from around the city. Till then, stay lucky. You know, our producer, Sonia Cho Swanson's like, what if, like, I drew a design for a tattoo and I, like, tapped into a tattoo parlor and they, like, talked me through a self-tattoo?
Oh, Sonia!
DIY tattoo!
No.
I'm a little freaked out.
You don't want to do that. There's professionals. Pay artists.